News Radio 1180 WHAM proudly welcomes you to Sound Bites. This is America's longest running computer show. Call the show now, 222-1180. The Choice One toll free line, 1-800-295-1180. Or star 1180, a free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers. Now, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Good morning, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Sunday, the 16th of July, Anno Domini 2006, and you lucky people, you're listening to Sound Bites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Rob Linton.
And at 7 minutes after the hour, this is Sound Bites. It's a balmy 85 degrees here in downtown Rochester, New York, hub of civilization in the Western world.
It's only 11 o'clock.
And it's just a little after 11. It's already 85 degrees.
This is where you walk up to somebody and say, hot enough for you?
And get your head
give you
handed
a vaccine gesture and keep walking.
Yeah, right.
Beat the out of you.
But yes, it's a beautiful warm day. This is a beautiful day to go find a friend with a pool.
Brian, are you listening?
Nick will be over right after the show.
Have some fun. So yeah, it's going to be, it's a beautiful day out there. It's nice and warm and sweaty and hot and stay indoors.
Yeah, it's going to get hot. Yeah, and wear light clothing, though, if you got to be outside.
And drink a lot of liquids.
Yes.
Very important. Very, very important. All right, we're here to talk about computer stuff, though. Health is an entirely different show. Give us a call.
You got to be healthy to work on your computer. That's we want to exactly keep them healthy.
And your computers, by the way, those of you who have no air conditioning, turn off your computers.
Yes.
For real. You don't need them overheating in this because they will.
Well, it's only going to heat up your house, too. And if you're trying to keep that cool, you know, like you say, if you don't have the AC or that and you just got the fans, you're trying to keep yourself cool by having the computer running. You're just adding more heat inside the house.
My favorite are the people who say, I don't know, my computer seems to be overheating. I don't know why. Well, it's sitting in a window.
Yeah.
You know, well, I like to look out while I'm computing. Yeah. Well, put the computer in the shade somewhere.
Yeah, the sun's beating down on it.
You bring a webcam picture up on your screen and see what it looks like outside.
Buy a poster. One of the things that you should always make sure you do is have plenty of ventilation around the computer. Make sure it's in the shade. Make sure that there's nothing blocking any of the vents.
The worst thing for the computer are those hutches you buy where you shove the computer into a cabinet and close the door.
Yeah, it's in a small space, and it's right up against the back wall of the cabinet, or they put it alongside their desk, and again, there's very little space,
in the corner.
Up in the corner again.
And you kink all the cables, and the two problems, the computer overheats and fails, and you kink all the cables in the back, and they fail.
Right. All right, give us a call. If you're in the 585 area code, the number is 222-1180. If you're outside the 585 area code, it's the Choice One toll-free line, 800-295-1180. And, of course, Verizon Wireless customers, it's star 1180 for you. So it's the 1180 theme, and I wonder why they picked that number. All right, first news item of the day, end-of-life support. We're done. We're done for Windows 98, Windows XP Service Pack 1, and, I'm sorry, Dave, Windows ME.
I got to admit, you know, just before I went on vacation, I checked the poll, and I want to thank all those great folks that support me in deeming that great product that no longer exists is officially dead.
Yeah. Yeah, it's officially dead on July 11th. That was it. July 11th brought a close to the extended support for Windows 98, Windows 98 Second Edition, Windows ME. That's all based on Microsoft's life cycle policy. Microsoft retired all public and technical support, including security updates. Existing support documents and content, however, will continue to be available, so a little bit of help will be available, but not much.
Not for all your holds and everything else. And most software vendors are not supporting it anymore. I mean, Norton isn't. McAfee's not going to. I mean, they're all getting away from it. It's a dead product. They got to move on to bigger and better things.
Right. The big reason Microsoft is retiring is because they're outdated. They can expose customers to security risks. Microsoft recommends that anybody who's still running 98 or ME upgrade to a newer, more secure Microsoft operating system such as Windows XP.
And quite often that means buying a new computer because your old computers may not be oomphy enough.
Oomphy enough. Nice. For those people maybe who've got an old machine and can't afford to upgrade, it might be time to look at Linux. UbuntuLinux.org is the place you go for that. On October 10th of this year, Microsoft will end public support for Windows XP Service Pack 1. So you'd better upgrade the computer to Service Pack 2. And that, of course, is free.
Yeah.
So that's not a problem.
Go online, get it, and be
done with it. A real problem for those folks who are on a limited budget, have a computer that's working fine for them, even if it's running ME.
Yeah.
You know, the one reason I'm not as down about it as you are is because a lot of people, that's what they got and that's what they can afford.
Oh, yeah. No. I'm not criticizing folks here. Not the folks, because they were sold that bill of goods.
Right. You're right. You're criticizing Microsoft.
Any individual that's running it, it's no criticism against them. It's against Microsoft for selling a product that they didn't support.
Right.
That's my main gripe. Right. And it's more or less in defense of the folks that, you know, got stuck buying Windows ME, had no choice. Well, that's what came with it.
Right.
I can't blame them. It's darn Microsoft. And
some of the issue, too, is how quickly computers are outdated. You know, we have customers come in all the time. I've got a pretty new computer. It's only 8 years old.
Yeah, right.
Pretty new is a week.
Right. But for those folks who are on a limited income, can't buy a new machine, now they've been orphaned. Mm-hmm. It might be time to look at Ubuntu Linux.
Yeah.
Or Damn Small Linux. There's a version called Damn Small Linux. Does all kinds
Get
of
out.
Stuff. Runs on a tiny little machine. In fact, you can put it on a USB thumb drive and then boot the machine from the thumb drive, run Damn Small Linux on it, and take it from machine to machine and do whatever work you want to do.
Well, I'll be damned.
Possibly. I don't know anything about that. This is a computer show.
Do I need to have my hand on a no-no button over here?
That's the name of the distribution.
That's the name of the program.
All right.
Nothing I can do about that.
It is what it is.
All right. We'll keep it clean
for you, Rob. We're just trying to keep you on your toes.
You weren't even in the room. What do you know? You're wandering around. Who knows what you're
sunbathing
doing.
There.
Sunbathing there. You know, you're get some coffee floor. And is things it, like that.
Sure,
you know.
Sure. Hanging out in the, the place. Go on down, see if there's anything open downstairs. Sure, I get it. All right, just to make Rob happy, now we're going to go to the phones. No, we're not. Apparently, Rob's not going to be happy today.
Let me ask you a question.
What?
Look at the clock.
Yeah.
What time is it?
It's 14 minutes after the hour.
Which usually happens around this time.
There's this one.
Well, yeah. The official clock. The official clock here says it's 14 minutes after the hour, and that means we're going to take a quick break. I don't pay any attention to the clock. I look to you, Rob. You are the man who keeps us on track. You are a guiding light.
Well, don't know what to tell you.
I think the lights are kind of bright in here.
But right, with all this sunshine coming in, it's a little hard to see. It is now 15 minutes after the hour. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and all of you on the greatest computer show in the known universe, Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
See, this is the difference between us and him. He thinks hot summer nights. He's got this whole idea of hot summer nights. We're thinking, get me to air conditioning.
That's a fine English singer, William Broad.
Yeah.
Sometimes known as Billy Idol.
Billy Idol, exactly. All right, before we get to the phones, we should mention that McAfee is urging everyone to update. There was a dangerous design flaw in their flagship technology sets up your software and does all that stuff. And they fixed it 6 months ago, but didn't know they'd fixed it. Thank you very much. And they issued an apology, which is very rare for them. And they urged everybody to install the updated version of the software immediately, because when they basically said, we didn't realize we fixed the problem. It was basically an accident that they fixed it. And so when they sent it out in January, the new updated version, they described it only as having new features, you know, new enhancements. Mm-hmm. And a lot of companies in particular don't update software that just has feature enhancements until they've done a thorough test on it. And since the old one was working fine, who needs new features? Right. You know, big deal. But now they're saying, you really have to upgrade this because we fixed a huge flaw and we didn't tell anybody about it because we didn't know about it. Right, right.
They were at the top of the game, you know, and they've already fixed something that was broken, which they didn't realize was broken.
Right.
And sometimes there's just so much code looking through it all and here's how this works and that works.
Yeah.
Right, and it's the interactions, the unintended consequences.
When it was one guy typing on one computer, it was a lot easier.
Right. All right, our first caller today, Andy from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Andy. What's your question?
Hi. I've got a Windows machine running 2000 Pro.
Mm-hmm.
Got all the usual stuff running. I do the security tango. Got Zone Alarm going. Norton system works. Keep it all updated. My wife's out surfing the net, and all of a sudden her homepage is redirected to MSN.com. Can't seem to get that fixed. I've rerun everything, ran Stinger, you know, waltzed the tango to the T, and whatever it is isn't showing up on the radar as being something bad.
What browser do you use?
My normal browser preference is Netscape. She was on Internet Explorer when it happened.
All right. Now, when you go into the... You know, on Internet Explorer, and go into the tools and Internet options.
Yeah,
is the page there her default page? MSN. That's where you change your default page.
Yeah, I've tried that, and every time I put it in, I say apply. It says okay. Mm-hmm. I get out. I hit home page.
Yeah.
And it goes right back into the MSN redirect. I've got that up in front of me at the moment.
All right. Now, have you tried running CW Shredder?
Not yet.
There are several spyware programs that will change your homepage so you log back into the spyware program and download it again, but it usually doesn't send you to MSN.
Well, that could be a phony MSN page. I mean, they make them look real, and they're thinking they're going to MSN.
Or it's a secondary redirect. Remember that exploit for a while where there's two URLs, two addresses in the URL? It goes to the first one, runs the malicious code, and then sends you to the second one, so you never notice.
Actually, what it does is it says Microsoft.com, and then ISAPI redirect.dll, and then when it turns around, it moves you out to MSN. So the Microsoft comes up, and then you get MSN.
Yeah, you've got something else in there. I would.
Now, it also created, I was out looking last night. It's interesting because it only affects her account. It does not affect my account or my son's account. Now, I don't know whether that's because of the way XP Pro is set up or...
Yeah, because of each user and where she might have gotten. It's just like Windows XP, you know, each user gets its own profile. And so it's probably just her profile is because it's in that folder.
Okay. Also, it created, when I go in and I look at the documents and settings folder, and there's like one there for each user, because she was complaining she couldn't see any of her stuff she'd saved in My Documents. Well, I looked. Her original My Documents folder is there, but now there's a second one that has her username .office, which is the name of the computer.
Okay, Andy, here's another one that I might suggest that you try using. You can do it for a trial. It's a trial version, then it's like 15 days, but you can at least download it and try. It's called eWidow. And it's, again, a utility that gets rid of a lot of this stuff.
Okay.
And it's only free for 15 days, and then you got to purchase it. But it might get at least the bug out of there. You can, you know, install it and then uninstall it. But it's called eWidow. Try running that and see if that'll get rid of it for you. I think it very well might. Pretty confident of that.
Yeah. All right. eWidow. Excellent. Steve will find that somewhere.
And I've seen, especially in 2000, but in XP too, where you're doing some diagnostic testing and you reload the OS, and suddenly everyone has a second username folder. You know, named dot the computer name, and it looks like they've lost all their stuff, but it's in the other username folder that now you don't have permission to see. So it gets really tricky and confusing to fix.
Right. All right. Our next caller is Chris from Canandaigua, New York. Welcome, Chris. What's your question?
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I have unsuccessfully tried to download the latest version of Adobe Reader.
Right.
And I keep getting an error 1316.a. It says that it's unable to read the file from the installer.
Are you on dial-up?
No.
Error 1316.a.
Right.
It definitely sounds like a bad download, but if it keeps happening, I would suggest the problem is likely not you, but a bad file up there.
Okay.
I would write to them and tell them.
It's a Microsoft registry error. Error 1316.a.
Okay.
A network error occurred while trying to read data.
That's what it says.
Yeah. I found a tech note at Microsoft's website about how to fix it.
We'll get that posted.
We'll get that posted online. Steve will put that up. If you go to our website, soundbites.org, that's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, click on the links tab. The third set down is a list of the sites mentioned weekly on the show. Steve will have that up by the end of the commercial break, which we're going to take right now, back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you on 27 Minutes After the Hour. Yeah, you're listening to Sound Bites. We're going to get that up. The links come up every week. I need to tell you that we do. Steve is incredible at getting the links thing going every time we do this. He
paste them in there so folks can find them right away.
He puts them up pretty quickly. He'll have that up in just a couple of minutes.
And the basic answer is to uninstall the version you've already got and then download the new version again. They're fighting each other.
Oh, I see. All right. But Steve will have that up so you can actually take a look at their deal. But we'll make sure that gets posted. There's an amazing amount of stuff in the links list. If you take a look through that list, you can probably answer a bunch of your own questions. We'll be right back on the other side with Dave, Steve, Nick, and Rob on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
At Hess Express, these guys can answer your questions. Back to more Soundbites on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 31 minutes after the hour, a beautiful 86 degrees in Rochester, New York. You're listening to Soundbite. Is that the way you want to hear
smooth
it?
Smooth like butter.
Like butter. All right, back to the phones in a minute. But before that, we should talk about the fact that a company called Intersections, Inc., which is an online security company.
This was really cool.
Has published a list of all the cities, how likely it is you will have your identity stolen, the top 50 cities. 9 of the top 10 cities are on the West Coast, while the majority of the safest cities fall to the East. It's called Sperling's Best Places is actually conducted the study. 10 of the 10 most risky cities, number 1, San Francisco, Seattle, Denver, San Jose, San Diego, Atlanta, Salt Lake City, Las Vegas, Sacramento, and Phoenix. The 10 least risky cities, number 41 to number 50 on the list, right? Number 41, Rochester, New York, hub of civilization in the Western world. Providence, Rhode Island, Cincinnati, Cleveland, Virginia Beach, New Orleans. Well, it's not a lot left to steal down in New Orleans.
Yeah, really?
Birmingham, Louisville.
Unless you see it floating.
Buffalo, New York, number 49. And at number 50, the place where the universe stops, Pittsburgh. So we're in the bottom 10 for places that you can get your identity stolen. That, of course, doesn't mean you should relax.
Mm-mm.
You should still be vigilant.
Because I had a friend, her mother's identity was stolen.
Yep.
It is hard to get it undone.
It's very tough. All right, our next caller, Rod, calling from the number 41 on the list, Rochester, New York. Welcome, Rod. What's your question?
Good morning. I'm getting zone alarm.
Yes.
And I'm getting on the screen, I get the windows for updates. It gives you two choices, one to download for the internet or download the updates.
Right.
And I click on updates. And then it wants me to save it into a file. Okay, and it comes back and it gives me all the files in the computer and local disk C and all those files. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure which file I'm supposed to save those things in, or do I just put a new folder in?
Just create a temporary folder.
Yeah, it's whichever folder you will be able to find it in later, because when it finishes downloading, you have to find the file and run the install.
Wait, Rod, it's not asking you to pick one of those files on the list. It's just showing you what's already in the folder where it's going to save it.
Okay, because it seems to be highlighting user.
Yeah, user.
Right.
A lot of people throw it on their desktop so they can find it later, but then you get too many things on your desktop. After you install it, you can delete the installer.
But you can pick any file, any folder you want to save it in.
Okay.
You'll notice it has a name down there, ZA-something.
Okay.
And then you just remember that name.
Okay.
Remember where you saved it. Go to that place and double-click on that name.
Which is why it's easier just to throw it on the desktop.
Right.
All right, fine. Thank you. And also, I installed an air conditioner in a bedroom yesterday, and I also have. There's also a computer on the same outlet.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when that air conditioner kicks on, is there going to be a tremendous drain on the power supply? Or?
It could be a jolt that you might get, you know, a spike or that on that.
Well, it'd be a drain, and then when
a brownout,
and then, which is actually a lot more common and a lot worse than surges.
Yeah, you really should put it on a separate circuit. If not, your best bet. Well, the best bet for everybody, truly, particularly in these, you know, in these days when we have fluctuations in our electric supply, what with the heat and everything else going on, is to get an uninterruptible power supply. Now, there are two kinds of those. There are the kinds, they're both batteries, right? It's just basically a big battery.
Battery pack.
But on one, it sits and waits for the flow of electricity to be interrupted and then jumps in. Well, there's always a lag between when it happens and when the UPS jumps in. And that can be bad. The other kind basically runs the computer constantly from the battery and constantly recharges the battery from the wall plug. That kind, if there's any sort of brownout, the computer doesn't even notice it because the battery just keeps
on
ticking.
Doesn't even hiccup.
And if there's a surge for some reason, believe me when I tell you a battery can handle a surge a whole lot better than a power supply. Basically, it's just a lot of extra power, and it just takes it. So given a choice, I would suggest your best bet is to get an uninterruptible power supply and make sure it's the kind that constantly runs from the battery rather than the kind that kicks in when there's a problem.
And they're not that expensive, and especially in Rochester with a lot of older houses.
Right.
You know, if the refrigerator kicks on and your lights dim, you've got power problems.
Oh, especially these air conditioners, too. You know, I mean, that first kick on and it's getting that condenser and coil going.
Right.
You know, that's a big jolt there. And then, oh, by the way, if other folks in the neighborhood are kicking on their air conditioners, because if you are, they are, and that could be quite a surge also on down the line.
And there's also rolling brownouts that RG&E intentionally does around
every power company utility
around the county to distribute the power load better. So, you know, say there's an especially hot wind in Irondequoit, and so everyone in Irondequoit turns their power on, RG&E will suck power from other towns and shift it over there where it's needed more.
Right. So, in general, for everybody, a UPS, an uninterruptible power supply, is more than just a nifty toy. It's kind of a necessity.
Yep.
All right. Our next caller, Lauren from Greece, New York. Welcome, Lauren. What's your question?
Good morning, gentlemen. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a Dell Inspiron 2650, and yesterday morning I started getting that dreaded blue screen with the error driver IRQL not less or equal, and it doesn't give me much information about what is actually causing. There's like no file name on the screen. I tried going back to checkpoints from previous days, and that hasn't helped the problem. It does work in safe mode 100% perfectly.
Okay.
But not when I boot up normally.
So even in safe mode, though, there's no point that you can restore back to?
I tried going back a couple of days, and nothing has worked.
What about going back, say, a week?
I haven't tried that. I've gone back a few days.
No, you might want to, because this problem could have been sitting in the system for a while. Whenever I do a restore, I always pick a week at least.
Okay.
because some of these problems can be festering themselves and just waiting for the right moment to kick in. So try going back about a week. If not, if that doesn't work, what you can do is install, I'm assuming you're running Windows XP?
Yes, I am.
All right. You can put XP over XP. In other words, you put the CD back in, boot the machine up, start doing the install. The first time you see install, you click that, you bypass the repair. Then you'll hit the F8, and then you're going to see a screen where it says repair the second time. That's when you do the repair, and it'll install Windows over Windows.
All right, we have to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you on the greatest computer show in the known universe, Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
We're not sure what Sean Hannity knows about computers. But then again, we're not sure what the Soundbites boys know about anything but computers. Catch Sean Hannity later today on Wham! Now, back to Soundbites on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And this, at 44 minutes after the hour, is Soundbites under beautiful... I can't tell.
I was going to say, what are you looking at, the blinds?
I'm looking at the blinds, but it is 86 degrees.
Under really dark, cloudy... Oh, wait a minute, the blinds are down.
Yeah, right. I was looking, I said, it shouldn't be quite that... I can't... Oh, the blinds, okay.
Well, that's an old classic stupid user question. Some of the websites list... Rink Security has got a couple of stupid users and stupid tech questions, too. Someone called up tech support and said, my computer's not working, and... You know, they start with the first thing, is it plugged in? I don't know, I can't see. Well,
you're right.
Is the monitor turned on? I don't know, I can't see. Why can't you see? Well, the power's out. Would that matter?
Right. I can't see, why not? My eyes are closed. Knock, 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 knock.
Are you running Mac or Windows?
Yeah.
Oh, my next cubicle over has Windows in it. Maybe that's the problem.
You're right.
And hangs up, yeah.
Yep, my favorite, I got a call. This was at a place where I worked where basically no department owned their own machines. The company owned the machines. So we were free to move stuff around as we needed to do whatever we had to do.
Mm-hmm.
This woman calls up and says, is it bad if there's smoke coming out of the monitor? Yes. Turn it off, unplug it. I'll bring you a new one. And in those are the days when most people had green screen monitors.
Yep.
Only a few had color monitors. I said, is it a color monitor? Dead silence on the other end of the phone, and finally she says, well, it's sort of beige.
Yep.
Okay, I'll bring two then. I'll be over in a little while.
What color? Yeah.
With two nice monitors. That'll work for me.
I smoked a monitor this week.
Oh, you let it all
which end did you like?
Yeah. I went, the video goes out. No, oh, crap. The video card just failed on the computer, and then I smell the smoke.
Yeah. All right, our next caller is Keith from Farmington, New York. Welcome, Keith. What's your question?
Hey, guys, I got a question and some advice that may help that guy with the air conditioner.
Excellent.
One is you never know how dirty your car windows are until you go to the drive-in. Two, tell the guy, all these guys do is figure out the watts of that air conditioner, which is probably on the box or on it. Divide the watts by the volts, which is, assume it's 120, which will give them the amps.
Yeah, some devices
you can figure
list
up all the amps on that circuit and see what size breaker he's got on it.
Yeah, some devices list volts and amps and multiply them to get watts, and some devices list watts and volts and you divide them and get amps.
Right.
Ohm's law.
So that would help. But my question is, I have a laptop that my wife and I use.
Mm-hmm.
And I run not your security tangle, but I just run through the basic stuff on mine and pick out all the adware and all the crap that shows up.
Mm-hmm.
But when I do it, I'm assuming that I was doing it on the complete C drive. So I did mine, and just for the heck of it, I logged on with her as a user, and did it from her being logged on, and I found more stuff.
Yeah,
is it
right.
Possible? Do you have to do that each time for each user?
Adware,
yes.
And SpyBot, you have to do every single user.
Okay.
The virus scan program, that will scan the whole hard drive.
All right.
Because they've changed their methodology there that it will check in the document and settings folder, it will check all of them. But when it comes to Adware and SpyBot, they only check that particular user's folder.
And it's basically a permission issue that when you're logged into a single user, the permissions on the files, you can only see your files, not other users. And that's part of the security of the operating system.
Right. One of the things that the antivirus software does is run as the system user,
right.
Which means that it can hit everything. But it also makes it a prime target for the virus writers, because if they can take over the system user, they own the system.
They have the world.
So, you do, at this point at least, because they make them more secure by making them more limited, you do have to run the anti-spyware stuff on every user.
All right, I appreciate it, gentlemen. Have a nice day and stay cool.
Thank you, Keith, and thank you for your advice to Ron. Ron, I hope you're still listening.
Yeah, we had one person hit eight users. And they had to run everyone.
It's a couple hours in each user, minimum.
Well, then there was like four kids, and I said, well, I need the password. And they said, well, I'll see if I can get them.
Oh, well, thanks.
I said, well, tell you what, either you get them or I'm wiping the passwords out. Well, my kids might get upset. Well, license.
Whose computer is it?
Yeah.
So right.
I wound up wiping them out because.
All right, we're going to take a break. Impressive. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you on Soundbites.
You can understand. It's Soundbites, America's longest running computer show on News Radio 1180 WHAM. Once again, here's Nick Francesco.
I got my first real six string, bought it at the Five and Dime, played it till my fingers bled.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
Don't act like you didn't enjoy that. You're the one doing the air guitar in there.
I'm loving it. I didn't say I wasn't loving it.
I'm Rob Linton.
And at 52 minutes after the hour, a beautiful 87 degrees. It's Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. And we're going to get back to the phones in just one moment. But first, a fascinating thing just happened. A paralyzed man using a new brain sensor has been able to move a computer cursor, open email, and control a robotic device simply by thinking about it. They believe the brain gate sensor, which involves implanting electrodes in the brain, could offer new hope to people paralyzed by illness or injury. The 25-year-old man is the first of four patients with spinal cord injuries, muscular dystrophy, stroke, or motor neuron disease testing the brain-to-movement system developed by CyberKinetics Neurology, Neurotechnology Systems, Inc. In Massachusetts, the scientists implanted a tiny silicon chip with 100 electrodes into an area of the brain responsible for movement. The activity of the cells was recorded and sent to a computer which translated the commands and enabled the patient to move and control the external device. Now, that's pretty fascinating in and of itself, but I want you to remember that into the next segment, and we'll talk about a second fascinating thing that happened and the implications of putting the two of them together. Our next caller is Sam from Greece, New York. Welcome, Sam. What's your question?
Good morning, gentlemen. Hey, that was an interesting fact about the ID theft at Rochester and Buffalo rank towards the bottom.
Yes.
Yeah, it's amazing because most people in Western New York are broke. So yeah. Really, why would you want to steal anything?
That's probably the reason, yeah.
Being totally computer illiterate, never owning one, I'm thinking of getting my feet wet. Is there a computer out there that's friendly user, a guy that's totally ignorant of, I mean, I don't even know where the start button is, that you could recommend that I tinker with? Or maybe go somewhere and use one, like in a library or I don't know.
You can certainly go to the library and use them.
Go to the library and get your feet wet there.
There are a couple of very good machines out there. The folks at Microsoft have done huge usability studies to make Windows easy to use. The Macintosh is basically... Steve, I can't believe you aren't jumping in and talking here.
I was waiting for you to finish, and thank you for mentioning the Mac.
Thank you. The Macintosh is you know, the gold standard when it comes to ease of use.
User groups, though.
Linux is pretty good, but yes, my suggestion is twofold. First, you should probably go to the library and check them out, play with them, sit at them, and figure out what they do. But even more importantly, check out the local user groups. there are people who meet every month based on their operating system. It depends on, you know, which group you go to. There's the Rochester Computer Society for the PC side of things, the Windows side. And then there's Apple Cider for the Macintosh side. Go and talk to folks. See what they like and don't like. People bring their machines all the time. They'll let you. They'll show you stuff. They'll, you know, they'll give you a good grounding in what's available. That's probably your best bet before you spend your money to see where you might want to go.
And Sam, you're in Greece, right?
Yes, please.
All right. What you might also want to check out is the continuing education in Greece on computer programs.
Yeah, a lot of the high schools and colleges have continuing education, adult learning programs. I used to teach Macintosh at the one in Greece.
Yep. And again, on our links page, I'm sure they're there already. If they're not, Steve will put them there. The Rochester Computer Society and Apple Cider are the two big groups in town.
Apple Cider meets at East High School, but there is another club, Club Mac, that meets in Greece at the town hall.
There you go.
And the one thing, Sam, you're going to want to do is if you go to the library and look this, you want to look this up, you got to go to www.soundbite.org because he said he doesn't have a computer, he's never used one.
Right.
That's the first site you could go check out and learn some more.
And check, because that's our site. So, yeah, absolutely. That's a great question, Sam, and it's a great thing is, you know, it's like buying a car.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't just jump out and buy a car. And the reality is what's a good computer to buy is the same question as what's a good car to buy. The answer is, really, what are you going to do with it?
Yep.
You know, are you going to drive to the store for milk or do you want to race at Le Mans? You know, there's a whole set of criteria that are different depending on what you're going to use it for. So going and kicking the tires, driving the different models, talking to the various salespeople without making a commitment day one, that's how you go about buying a car. You look at the sites, you talk to the users, you might go to talk to somebody who owns one. That's how you go about buying a car the first time. The same is true of a computer. Go kick the tires. Go play with the machine itself. Talk to the people. You know, you can go to a couple of the stores and at least look at them. But what you really want to do is talk to somebody who uses one. Get a little guided tour, and you can do that at the clubs fairly easily. It's probably the best way to learn about them.
And what's interesting is how people have changed over the years. I would just want a basic computer for basic stuff. You know, and that
right,
basic
yeah.
stuff is watching video on the internet, you know, managing your digital photo library, maybe a little video editing with your own camcorder. You know, basic is a lot
that.
Better.
Yes, I love that because people used to say, you know, I just want a basic computer. And we'll tell you now, mm-mm. I just want to do a couple of things with it. All I want to do is email, maybe a little web browsing, listen to all my music, see
transfer
the videos,
pictures.
Transfer yep. pictures. You know, play some, you know, games. Well, wait, games just took you to yet a third level
mm-hmm. yeah.
because it's the very high-end machines that you do games in. You know, yeah. it's not the rest of the stuff. I can, you know, my old 486 will read mail. You know, my old 486 will even surf the web if all you want is the information. You know, I can do that off my little Palm device.
Yeah.
But if you know, by the time you get up to the graphics and the sound and the video and the games, now you're talking a much higher end machine. Speaking of high end, wait until you hear the news that's coming up next with Rob Jason. In the meantime, we're going to take our own little break. Rob's going to bring you news and sports and weather. We're going to talk about hooking your brain up to a computer, all kinds of interesting new magnetic memory chips coming in, things like that. So we've got a lot more. We've got some folks on the line. If you're not on the line, I have no idea why you wouldn't be. You might as well get on the line now because you're going to want to talk to us. And we'll be back on the other side of all of that important stuff. Rob's revving up. Look at him. He's ready to go. He's ready to read the news. He's ready to give. He's barely awake in the other room there. And we'll be back on the other side. Thank you very much. And all the same rude Italian street gestures to you. It's 59 minutes after the hour, and we will be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you on Soundbite.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on News Radio 1180 WHAM. Get online now. Call 222-1180. The Choice One toll-free line at 1-800-295-1180 or star 1180. A free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And this is Soundbites. It's 5 minutes after the hour. 88 degrees, gone up like 3 degrees since we started the show. That's beautiful. It's getting up into the 90s. Very nice. I tell you, I used to love the heat. Couldn't get enough of it.
No way.
Could not get enough of it. We'll be back to the phones in a minute. If you're not on the line, give us a call, 222-1180. Inside the 585 area code. Outside it, it's 800-295-1180. And, of course, Verizon Wireless customers, star 1180. Now, before the weather and news break, I read a news article about a paralyzed man moving a computer cursor through thought. They implanted a chip in his brain, and he can actually move a cursor, open email, control a robotic device. There's also a new brain-computer interface technology that could turn our brains into automatic image-identifying machines that operate faster than human consciousness. Researchers at Columbia University are combining the processing power of the human brain with computer vision to enable a novel to develop a novel device that will allow people to search through images 10 times faster than they can on their own. Obviously, the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, or DARPA, the D is silent, as in knife, is funding research into the system in the hopes of making federal agents' jobs easier. The system harnesses the brain's well-known ability to recognize an image much faster than the person can identify it. While users watch a set of streaming images or video footage, the technology tags the images that elicit a signal and ranks them in order of the strength of the signal, and then you can go back and look at those instead of having to wade through tens of thousands of them at once. This is, we believe, just the first halting steps toward directly connecting your brain to a computer. So my question of the week, we have a poll every week at our website, soundbites.org. That is bites with a Y. Francis wants us to make sure you know that. We have a poll every week. Last week's poll was about Microsoft's worst flop. And rather than put 700 or 800 choices in there, I picked just a few. The winner with 60% of the votes
was
Windows ME.
Yes!
Congratulations, Dave. You've brainwashed our folks
quite
well.
No, I've converted. I am brainwashed.
Right, converted.
I have converted them from the dark side.
They've seen the light. Followed by Microsoft Bob. Followed by MSNBC. Does anyone remember the start of MSNBC? When like half the show would be about going to the blogosphere and seeing what people were blogging about the news item they'd just seen. And let's take a look at the poll we just put up about the news item we haven't finished reading yet and all that stuff. And it was a dismal, dismal failure.
Yeah.
Some people think it still is.
Well, yeah, I'm not going to go there.
Almost,
but that
almost
part
as
of
bad
it,
as Fox News?
Is that part of it certainly was a dismal failure. Followed by Clippy. Followed by other, followed by ultra mobile PCs. Only 8 of you voted for that. That's because you can't really see them much right now. But that was great. We had so I want to thank each and every one of you who voted.
I remember when they removed Clippy from Microsoft Office. When they were going on the Office tour, showing the new version, they had some poor kid in a Clippy costume handing out resumes.
Yeah,
because I lost my job. What do I do now?
And getting probably kicked in the shins every time he walked up to somebody. 269 of you voted, making it number 184 on the all-time hit list. Thank you all very much. Now, this week's poll, of course, is about the human brain interface. And the question is, would you connect your computer to your brain? And there are really only two choices here, yes and no. I know that normally I have a bunch of humorous ones, but this one's actually fairly simple. So far, 69 of you have voted. 72% of you say no. 72% of you say no. That's an interesting choice.
Go ahead, finish.
Well, I was just going to say, when you're done, then you look at the little yellowish box underneath and click on Give Us Your Opinion. That will take you to my website, AskNick.com.
That's AskNick.com.
Ooh.
That is impressive. And you can leave an opinion because obviously you folks are way too verbose for just a yes and no thing. So the question there, of course, is what would be your biggest reason to connect your computer to your brain? And I am asking you to keep it clean. Yeah, a couple of people have already said, you know, I would connect it if it wasn't a Windows machine because the last thing I want to do is blue screen my brain. That works for me, I'll tell you that right now. But anyway, you can do that and then take a look around AskNick.com. I'll say it. It's a terrific website. I publish a newsletter 3 times a week. You have to be a member to get it and to read it, but it's got all kinds of interesting stuff in it. You can certainly click on the newsletter tab and see what the last few newsletters were about. The tips, the tricks, the rants, the raves, the website of the week, the question and answer of the week. There's all kinds of stuff that's on my website. Feel free to take a look around there. Of course, you can buy things at the Ask Nick shop. But also, then come back to our website at soundbites.org. We also have a shop. Lots and lots of goodies show up there all the time. You can buy all kinds of wonderful things. There's a hat. There's hoodies. There's, of course, the world-famous Soundbites thong. And a bunch
of other
interesting...
Which is riding up on me.
Please keep that to yourself as much as humanly possible. And join us in the forums where the coolest people on Earth hang out every single week. In the meantime...
Well, I was going to say that related to the implants that we were talking about earlier, a minute ago, there was a story on BBC.
Not those kind of implants, Steve.
Yeah, well, no, there was a story on BBC earlier this week that human trials have begun on the bionic eye.
How cool is that?
Someone, you know, people that have lost their eyesight, they're putting a video camera in the eye socket with a little chip tied into the optical nerve that feeds impulses directly to the brain.
They can rebuild him. That's cool.
So yeah, so we're getting close.
Well, and there was a thing on television just the other day that they implanted a chip in a guy's arm down by the nerves that control the hand, and by flexing his hand in certain ways, he can control a wheelchair.
Yep.
Moving it left and right, forwards and backwards, change the speed, do all of that stuff. So as long as you have any sort of motor sensation, whether or not you can control, you know, you have motor control of an arm. You can now run your own. You can run your own.
They said he's looking at putting a chip right in his brain next.
Yeah, he is. He's and he was happy about that. He was eager. He was ready.
But you know,
Science of Stargate the other day too, didn't you?
That was on there, wasn't
was
it?
On
yeah,
there,
okay.
Yeah.
I
but you know what?
I've
this all
it.
Stems from one technology that's been around for a while,
and that would be
pacemakers.
Yes. Yep.
Technically, pacemakers are there to regulate the pulse of a heart. And, you know, if it starts going
the
wrong.
The first bionic parts. Yeah. Bicentennial Man by Isaac Asimov.
So it's just continuing
I don't know if I liked the movie with Robin Williams or not.
I wasn't that impressed with the movie. The book is terrific. The movie was like so-so.
Yeah.
Well, and that's the problem with a lot of science fiction movies, isn't it? The book is great. The movie is okay. But at any rate, that's what our poll is about. So please... get onto the poll at soundbites.org and leave your mark on history. We're going to go back to the phones. Our next caller waiting patiently on the line, Dan from Colesville, New York. Where's Colesville, Dan?
About 12 miles west of Attica.
Ah.
Heading toward Buffalo.
My wife has a friend that lives in Java.
Oh, just south of us.
Yeah, next to Attica. She used to live in Attica and moved to Java.
Sure.
I'll get away from the prison. Yeah. I got a Windows 98 SE. You guys are going to laugh and groan.
Yeah, right.
I downloaded the Zone Labs, or I updated Zone Labs late last week and got the pop-up message that it isn't going to work because Microsoft is, you've already gone over this on the show, is not going to support it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, what should I go to? I was on Dell's website for a few minutes yesterday. But which is Linux and Mac, and do those support Juno and ISPs that I can communicate easily with my family and friends are still on XP?
Linux, there is no, I do not, well, that's a good question. I don't believe there is a Juno client for Linux. I don't know if there's one for the Mac, is there?
Yeah.
How about other ISPs, emails?
ISP works with any computer.
The
internet was based on Unix. The fact that it works on Windows is a hack.
Oh, okay.
Are you doing dial-up or what?
Dial-up, yeah.
See, thing that is since you are on dial-up, the chances, you know, you worrying about running zone alarm isn't a big concern.
Well, 18 seconds is the average time to be infected.
Yeah, but I mean, for dial-up, though, most of your folks are scanning that are going to do serious damage. This has been my experience, are looking for the folks that are connected all the time. Whereas,
but they don't know or care. They don't know. If they can just take over your machine, they will.
BBC did an experiment where they took a box computer out of the box, plugged it in, dialed up the connection. Within 18 seconds, it was infected. Within 10 minutes, it was a zombie infecting other computers. And within 20 minutes, it crashed with too many spy programs.
What you might want to still do, though, is look, do a Google search for some. There are a couple other free firewalls programs that'll work out there with Windows 98. So I don't have one off the top of my head, unless you had the old version of, you know, Zone Alarm, that you could reinstall that to avoid.
I did get your disk from Soundbites with it on it.
With the old version?
Don't know if it's the old version, but
no, that's
you need 6.0 or older.
Yeah,
that's about some time you sent me a disk. I bought a disk.
You might want to try looking for, like I say, an older version, Dan.
The danger, same thing with antivirus software, is that they're not supporting the older OSs, and the danger of running an older version is you're not being as protected as you need to be.
Yeah. I don't know that there are any free ones, but certainly McAfee has one, Panda Software has one, Symantec has one,
but
F-Secure has one, but you have to pay for those.
And most of them don't support 98 anymore. They need at least 2000. Yeah.
Look for the older version, like we said, of Zone Alarm.
We'll look around for that and stick it up on the website, but I'm not going to promise we're going to find one quickly, because simply nobody's supporting 98 anymore. I hate to say it, and I'm sorry, but it's true.
It's life in the big city.
It is life in the big city. All right, our next caller, Edgar from North Chi-Line, New York. Welcome, Edgar. What's your question?
Yeah, I have an Inspiron laptop, and it's got a power problem. And I guess it doesn't recognize that the AC is plugged in, and so consequently my battery is draining and it won't work.
Very common problem on laptops, because people tend to shove them up against the wall, and you break the solder points on the power socket inside the computer. If you're really, really, really lucky, you can take the computer apart and solder it back together.
That's very rare. Can you move that, Edgar, on the back where you plug it in, does that move around pretty easily?
It moves a little, but I didn't notice anything different than when I initially purchased it. It didn't seem any less solid than before.
If you actually physically remove the battery, does it then recognize it's plugged in?
No. The only thing, there are a couple of lights on the front of the laptop that come on. But they just flicker now if I remove the battery.
You might have fried the charging unit.
It could be the charging unit. It could be the logic board.
Yep.
If you're handy with a voltmeter, you can see if you're getting power out of the AC adapter.
Yes, I did do that, and I'm getting 19.5 out of the AC adapter.
Then you're good there. It's unfortunately either the logic or the unit on the motherboard that charges and powers up.
Yeah, where the power socket connects into the motherboard.
Is this thing still under warranty?
No, it's out of warranty. I've had it probably about 2 years now. I contacted Dell, and they say it's a motherboard, but I've checked on the internet some forums who have said, well, I guess what you just said, the DC jack.
Which is connected to the motherboard, so the official replacement is the entire motherboard.
Well, no.
Right, they don't solder anymore if they can just replace a part, even if it's the whole motherboard.
But I've found places, I've got a couple of distributors that I can, if that power connector is broken, I can get a new one. It's labor intensive because literally I have to break down the whole laptop.
Right, it's certainly not cheap.
You're looking at a couple $300 either way.
Yeah.
But give Dave a call during the week and talk to him about that, 442-4843.
Mm-hmm.
In the meantime, we're going to take a break, but we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with Rob Linton, and me, Nick Francesco, and all of you, including all the folks on the phone, on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
Online, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. Now, back to Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, it's Soundbites under beautiful 89-degree skies, which I can't see through the blinds, here in Rochester, New York. Well, can you see what color the sky is?
Yeah, because my blind's open.
Then what color is the sky?
So you guys are in there with the incense and the candles and the leather couches and everything like that. You
got
to set a mood.
We've got the blinds down because we can set
that 60s mood. You've got one blind that's a half mast. The other two are closed.
I've got a real clear shot
of the building next door. Yeah.
The parking lot, yeah. Right.
Yeah. Well, actually, we do have the blinds down to cut down on the glare because we're trying to use the webcam again. So the bite cam is up online and
see how well it works. Oh, speaking of which, I need help. God knows I need help.
Your wife's not
But let me narrow that down as to exactly how I need help at this moment. Last week, both Dave and Steve, as I mentioned, were off in the Midwest doing wonderful things, whatever they were doing. And I
escaped the country.
Yeah, you did. You escaped the country. But I know I had them. I had you guys out doing consulting for Steve Ballmer and on something about Microsoft. I don't remember what it was. But
he'd need more than a couple of days.
I completely fugued out on the fact that I should have recorded the show, and I did not, and I apologize. But I know many of you do. So if somebody could email Steve a copy of last week's show so that we can put it into the archives, it's entirely my fault, and I completely take all blame. Thank you very much, and I'm sorry, but I just completely fugued. I apparently can't do it all at once, and I'm beginning to admit that now. I don't know if that's maturity or just age, and I'm not sure there's a difference anymore. What is it? What do they say? Growing old is inevitable. Growing up is optional.
Yes.
Well, I certainly haven't reached any form of maturity or anything, so we'll just move on from there. So if anybody's got that, please please send Steve a copy so that we can get it posted on the site. And again, I apologize. Our next caller, Dave from Perry, New York. Welcome, Dave. What's your question?
Hi, guys. Well, I got kind of a good news, bad news scenario here. I got a Windows 98 SC computer upstairs.
The good news?
I finally got it to network with my Windows XP laptop downstairs.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I got a wireless network going. But I screwed something up in setting it up, apparently, because every time the Windows SC machine is in a startup, it hangs up on an error. It's a Error 5733, the protocol manager reported an incomplete net binding. For more information, contact your network administrator. Who's he and what's his phone number?
He is you, and you know your phone number.
Oh, that's bad news.
That is the bad part, yeah. All right, so you've got a, yeah.
So I press the space bar, and it just goes on, but I got to sit there and babysit the thing while it's booting up, you know?
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, the first thing is, of course, never power down.
Yeah. Turn off the monitor.
Except under Windows, that doesn't necessarily...
No, 98SC hangs up, at least my machine, if I leave it on too long.
Right, right. Well, it's Windows. Yeah, absolutely, it'll do that. That's actually, I believe, a hardware conflict. Either the network card device driver failed to load.
Because I was going to ask him if he had any problems or issues when you were installing that and setting it up. Did it ask for a particular Windows driver or that, and you didn't have the CD and you said skip it?
No, actually, the setup was pretty good. It's a D-Link router, wireless router I put on it, and I hooked it up through the LAN cable thing.
Yeah. But the network card that went into the PC with 98 on it?
That network card was already in there, and it was working just fine.
Okay.
As far as I
and it works know. once you click enter, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, I just clicked the space bar, and it gives me that same error message right off again. But after a couple of seconds, it goes off of that, and I see my desktop.
And it does connect to the network?
Yes, yes. I can transfer files and everything. Kind of like a miracle to me, but I can.
What it sounds, oh dear, what it sounds like is things are loading in the wrong order.
Yeah,
It's trying to load the network connection before it's actually loaded the network driver. Uh-huh. Now, that's might be somewhere in your protocol.ini. Could be in any one of 100 files.
Well, one of the ways we used to try to fix that is go into your network control panel and remove all of the networking stuff, reboot it, and then put it all back in.
Ah.
That might be the easiest way to do it.
So 98SC machine, go to networking folder.
Yep.
And just delete everything.
Well, yeah. In the networking control panel, you're going to remove the TCP line, you're going to remove the Ethernet line, you're going to remove file sharing line, anything dealing with networking.
Right, and then reboot and go back in and add those things back in again. So write down what you removed.
And
reboot the machine and go add them in again.
Yeah, theoretically, it Windows should auto-detect the Ethernet card and load the driver and ask you for your driver disk.
Right. So make sure you have that handy.
And the Windows 98 CD if it's not already been copied onto the hard drive.
All right. There you go. That was easy enough. Our next caller?
For us.
Yeah.
It was easy for us. We just had to say, go do this, and we walk away.
It's going
to
be hot, so he can stay inside and...
In the air conditioning. Our next caller is Matt from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Matt. What's your question?
My question today, great show, guys, by
Thank
the way.
Thank you.
My dad crashed his hard drive, and it's an HP computer with an HP recovery disk on it. And when I did the recovery disk, it went through the whole recovery. And when the computer went to go reboot, it says Windows needs DLL files for kernel. So it looks like it's missing DLL files on the... on the recovery disk, and when I also contacted HP to kind of, you know, let them know what happened, and they wanted to charge us for the software or an extended warranty.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, except I'm not entirely certain that's what you need at this point.
I think you've got a bad hard drive.
Exactly. And it's not that the DLL files aren't on the recovery disk. It's just that where they've been put back on this on the hard drive is a bad section of the hard drive.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what it sounds like to me.
Might be able to go into FDisk and reformat your hard drive, and if it's just a weak sector, it'll get mapped out, and you'll be able to install it again. But if there's too many bad sectors, the hard drive just won't take.
Or if it's
OS.
Just it's a bad, it's a part of the hard drive that's bad, but the OS doesn't recognize that. So it may well be time for a new hard drive, Matt.
Okay. All
Sorry.
Right. Also, real quick. If I was to put my own corporate copy of XP onto it and see if that would take, would that be an option?
Not legally, no. Absolutely not. That is unfortunately completely illegal.
But technically, you might be able to try it as long as you remove it real quick to see if it's your...
Right, if what you're doing is checking to see if the hard drive is bad, I don't even know if Microsoft would have a problem with that, but you must then remove it and...
Well, I think if he puts that on but uses the code... It's on the actual machine.
Some of the disks don't work because the code is for, say, SP1, and if you have an SP2 disk, it won't work.
Right. You might want to try it, but I'm not going to promise it's going to work, nor that it won't screw up your corporate copy somewhere else down the line. Because Microsoft does record what you've put it on. It'll report back to Microsoft, and now Microsoft's going to say, well, you got it on two machines, and they'll disable both of them. But So I wouldn't do it if I were you. That's just me. I don't know. All right. Our next caller is Kip from Webster, New York. Welcome, Kip. What's your question?
Well, thank you very much. Yes, I think I have a hard drive problem also.
Huh?
Okay. I have a Macintosh LC3. Don't be laughing at it. I know it's old. But I have a sad face, and I have a code on it, and it won't start up. And I was wondering if you could give me some options on what I can do to recover it or fix it or...
Options that don't involve a hatchet?
Sad Mac is usually a software error.
No, you know what the sad face is? It's probably in sympathy with Lima right now, trying not to get the Walmart.
Yeah.
Well, any other options?
Sad Mac is usually a software error, something corrupted in the OS, and you need to reload your OS.
Oh, that might do it?
Yeah. Are you hearing any odd clicking noises from the hard drive?
It just kind of makes a groaning sound when it starts up in a, you know, like, and then the sad face comes on with an error code on the screen with a lot of zeros and some sevens and some Fs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you Google that number, you might find what the error code means, but it usually doesn't
help. Wait a minute.
Any.
I want to know how he's going to Google that moaning.
Yeah. Well, that's probably just the normal hard drive spin up.
Yeah.
Or it's just the Sad Mac sound.
Yeah. Well, that was the one of the niceties in the olden days, and to make Macs more personal, is when you turn them on, they smile at you.
Yeah.
And when there's an error, they frown.
Right.
So if I reload
okay.
So if I reload the operating system, it might work.
Yeah.
Okay.
You might have a Happy Mac.
Yep. Get the Happy Mac again.
And if
that
not,
was a huge argument in the Mac industry when they took off that Happy Mac.
Yeah.
When McDonald's models might take off that.
Yeah.
And what if that doesn't work? If I put the floppy disk in the drive and nothing happens?
You're going to have
It'll definitely boot the floppy drive and unless your disk or drive have you know, failed over the years. Blow out the dust can sometimes help. But you know, worst case is you reformat the hard drive and reinstall the OS. And if that doesn't work, it could be the hard drive has failed.
Right. So that would be my first step to do it, try and reinstall, and then from then on just progress like you just said.
Yeah.
Yep.
Wait a minute, I got to ask you that picture that I told you that I took. Matter of fact, for you folks, I went away on vacation, and I've always been kidding Steve about good uses for Macs. And I was down in this one little town called Walton, and there at this news store, or a newspaper place, was the door being held open, and I got a picture of it, and a Mac is holding the door open.
The old style 512
Mac. Now, is that a Happy Mac or a sad Mac because it's outside?
Yeah.
Holding the door open. I got to post that up on my website.
Yeah, absolutely. But I have to tell you, I don't know what it was, but something in this last conversation amused Dave to the point where his face is all red, tears are streaming down his face. Something amused
him. Careful of your heart, man.
Yeah. No, that's keeping it going.
Yeah, right.
Laughter is the best medicine. Folks always say, you know, it's so simple, but you got to know whether it's a Happy Mac or a sad
How happy is your Mac today? All right, our next caller is Monty from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Monty. What's your question?
Yes, I did a restore from an external hard drive.
Right.
Because I was having a problem with a particular program. The software company said it was an operating error. So I wanted to reload the XP Home Edition operating system. Did that. Program still didn't work. I said, okay, I'm tired of it. Left it alone. This was on Friday evening. Saturday morning, went to boot my system up. It booted normally, went through all the gyrations, came to my desktop. There was no start menu. There was no taskbar. There were no icons.
The Windows Explorer program hasn't finished launching yet.
Right.
And since if you wait long enough and it doesn't, there's something corrupted with it.
Yeah, or you could have a bad hard drive like the other person.
Yeah, there's several different things. Basically, what's happened here is, there is a program, the last program that loads in Windows is called Windows Explorer. Notice Microsoft calls everything Explorer or something because they're just not, they apparently can't afford to have somebody make up names.
Okay.
It's not Internet Explorer. It's not the web browser. Okay. It's Windows Explorer.
Right, exactly.
It's the actual desktop thing that makes Windows and lets you move files by dragging them, all that stuff. That's
okay.
Windows Explorer.
I used XP Service Pack 1, set up disks. Reloaded my Home Edition XP software.
Right.
It went through gyrations. I didn't want to do a complete new install. I did a repair. It went through the repair with no problems. Mm-hmm. Went through, brought up, rebooted,
yep.
Still the same thing.
Then you might have a couple bad sectors on the hard drive.
Or bad memory.
RAM?
Yeah. See, here's the thing. There's two things that this could be. As Dave says, it could be a bad area of the hard drive where this is being loaded. It could also be a bad area of memory where
which
this stuff is loaded into.
Yeah.
Now, the easiest way to figure out which, the easiest way to check your memory, is to go to a website called memtest86.com. memtest86.com. M-E-M-T-E-S-T. It's a memory tester for x86 processors, memtest86.com. If you go there, about halfway down the page, you'll find a download for the various downloads, one of which is an ISO image suitable for creating a bootable memtest86 CD-ROM. There's a zipped version and a G-zipped version. You want the zipped version. Download that. Burn the ISO image to a CD. Not as a file, not a data file, but actually burn the image, a bootable image. Then you can boot the machine with that CD, and it'll test all your memory. Let it run for about 24 hours, and it will tell you everything that's wrong with your memory. That's probably the easiest way to go. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave and Steve and Rob and me, Nick, on Soundbites 1180 WHAM.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton. I got to keep you on your toes.
Apparently you do. I'm sitting here waiting for the light to go on to say the mic is live. Nothing happens. I figure, okay, he's going to play another song. So
well,
I
you know what? I was looking through my list
on.
To see if, well, I was looking to see if I had anything appropriate.
Shouldn't
and I,
you do
I really
that ahead
don't.
Of time?
So I'll, you know, I've got to find a song that might be appropriate.
Uh-oh. Yeah, I'm waiting for that one. 44 minutes after the hour, still only 88 degrees, holding steady at 88 degrees.
You know, Johnny Carson had a great line years ago, and he said...
he had way more than one.
Now, listen, I'm trying to tell you a story.
Please.
He go. There was this thing he said, you know, it was so hot today, and then the audience goes, you know, how hot was it? And he goes, Burger King was saying, if you want it your way, cook it yourself.
The funniest one ever, how cold was it?
Yeah.
It was so cold, there was a dog stuck to a fire hydrant.
Ouch.
That was just hysterical. So we were, of course, using it for everything, you know. It was, she was so ugly, there was a dog stuck to a fire hydrant. He was so unhappy, there was a dog... And then it kind of ruined it for us. But okay.
You can write your letters of complaints to WHAM.
Right. Rob Linton at magnetic memory chips are hitting the market. The memory chip industry moved one step further from its dependence on power. Freescale Semiconductor's new memory chip was released last Monday. It's the first magnetoresistive random access memory device to hit the market. Magnetic power basically tries to solve the problem of losing data once the power is turned off. And it's useful for things like digital cameras, mobile phones, printers. Flash memory does that now. It can keep data after the power goes off, but this new MRAM technology is both faster than flash memory and lasts longer than a flash chip. Because, you know, if you reburn a flash chip a certain number of times, it wears out. The key difference between MRAM and flash is that MRAM is approximately 6 orders of magnitude faster than flash. Flash has a limitation on how many times you can write it. MRAM is basically unlimited. Magnetic technology works just like the magnets you play with by, you know, flipping around the north and south poles. The memory grid is basically a grid of these plates. Magnetic memory exists, of course, already in hard drives, but this is the first time that it's been combined with a semiconductor to make new memory. The really exciting part about this is you'll be able to buy systems with it within a quarter or so. So I'm very excited about that. It should be pretty interesting, actually, to see what comes of that, and we'll keep you informed of what's going on with that. Probably really expensive at first. But when they say systems, I believe they're talking about things like phones and stuff that they hope will eventually be good, easy with that stuff. All right, our next caller is Donna from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Donna. What's your question?
Actually, it's not Donna. It's Ross, but she called for me because I was driving the car.
Oh, that was nice of her. Thank you, Donna.
So we had to pull over and switch seats.
There you go.
My question
is that the old Chinese fire drill where you stop in the middle of the road, everybody jumps out of the car and runs around and gets back in different
places?
That's
what they call it, but we just did it on the side of the road, made it a little less.
On the side of the road, it's less annoying to everybody else. That's not so good then. All right. So what's your question? Was it Ross?
Yes.
Okay,
it's
Ross.
About the FTP bat downloader virus. Have you ever heard of that?
There are a bunch of viruses that I haven't heard of, but you could certainly have that one.
This one has really beat me down. I mean, I reformatted my computer, and before I did anything, I immediately put on my antivirus and whatever, and it continually keeps showing up. I have no idea how to get rid of it, and why does it keep showing up before I do even go online?
All right, one question for you.
Did you do any backups of information
and all that?
What's that?
Did you do backups of your documents and all that stuff?
Yeah, I've got all my stuff, because I reformat it once a year religiously.
All right, but what I'm wondering is when you did the backups, whether that virus was copied to your backups, So now once you do the install and then start to reload some of your data information, that's how you're reinfecting yourself.
Are you restoring from CD or from hard drive when you reinstall your computer?
When I reinstall it, when I reformat it, I'm just basically using the Windows XP Home Edition. And once that goes through, I reformat the hard drive. And once it comes up, I don't do anything but the antivirus, put that program on. And
from CD or from hard drive?
From a CD.
And then get all the updates?
Yeah, and then I get the updates, and probably within the next 10, 15 minutes, all of a sudden, there that bad virus pops up again. And so I've done this. I've reformatted it. And about a year ago, somehow I got rid of it.
Do you have multiple hard drives?
I have an external hard drive that I don't even, like, plug in until all I have, basically, when I reformat it and bring it up, is just the Windows. I don't put anything on there except the virus, which is off of a CD, the virus program.
The antivirus program, right.
We have seen viruses included on commercially pressed CDs.
What antivirus program is this?
It's the Easy, whatever you call it.
Easy Armor?
Yeah.
That's a good one.
It's
theoretically possible that we've seen disk duplicators get infected with viruses, so they make the disk you buy at the store, and it's got a virus already on it.
Right.
You might want to try downloading AVG. Uninstall the Easy Armor, put the AVG on there, and try running that and see if that gets rid of it for you.
The other thing is when you have you danced the security tango?
You format the home machine.
All right. Well, yeah, but if it's on that external drive and he hasn't cleaned that one.
And if he's not doing a cold boot, viruses can survive. But a lot of viruses can survive a warm boot if
but
you just restart the computer.
But he said he never even hooked up the external drive.
Even if you don't hook up the external drive at all, you get this back?
Yeah. I don't grab this virus program off the external drive. I have it on.
Right. But what I'm saying is when you find that this thing has come back, do you have the external drive connected or not?
No.
Wow.
Yeah. That's why I think Steve is on the right track. Maybe it's his CD that was burned for this Easy Armor that was infected, and it's grabbing it. That's why I say uninstall that, throw AVG on there, and see if that can get rid of it.
And I do have AVG. I mean, I've always put the Easy Armor one on off the CD. And
download the newest version of AVG. Try that instead, and don't put that disc back in. If it doesn't come back, toss that disc. Let us know what happens.
All right.
Yeah.
Give it my shot. I mean, this thing, once it's on a computer, I mean, how do you get rid of that thing? I mean,
formatting and should have gotten rid of it.
That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah,
it's popping back on.
You said this is the Trojan FTP downloader bat.
Yeah.
I found a link on how to delete it from another antivirus company. A couple of issues could be happening. Is some viruses can survive a warm boot. If you reboot the computer, the virus is still in memory, and even if you've reformatted the hard drive, it's in memory. So when you install Windows, you get the virus back. So make sure you do a cold boot. Shut the computer down between reformatting and starting the install again. And secondly, your computer's IP address could be listed in somebody's virus list, that whoever infected you or however you got infected to begin with. So as soon as your computer shows back up on the internet, it downloads itself through one of the security violations and in Windows.
Right. But try that and let us know. All right, our next caller, John from Fairport, New York. Welcome, John. What's your question? John?
Thank you for the tip on DSL. I really, really do like the Frontier DSL.
Good. I'm glad you do. Thank
you. My question today is, I'm getting this annoying pop-up. It's called popcorn.net, and apparently what it is...
Of course, pop-up from popcorn. Sure.
That's right. And what it is, it's kind of like a news, sports, weather type information service.
Yeah.
And they say that I ordered this back on July 7th. My 3-day free trial is up, and I'm stuck with a one-year membership.
That's very common. They want you to either click here to cancel the membership, and then they steal your identity, or they want you to phone them, and they run up your phone bill.
Yeah. Just say no and...
We have to run some sort of disinfector.
There are ways to get rid of it, and we will put those up online. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave, Steve, Rob, Nick on Soundbites.
News Radio 1180 WS.
These guys can answer your questions. Back to more Soundbites on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And I must tell you, are watching Soundbites. It is 57 minutes after the hour.
Watching?
So, yeah.
We got the webcam up.
Many of you are watching the webcam, okay? It's 88 degrees, and my brain has begun to fry. We're done for another week. What is that all about? All right. I want to thank everybody who called in. I want to apologize to everybody.
That's all they get. That's a Nick tease right there. You come back, we go away.
We go away. Come back, we go away. I'm a teaser. That's me. I be teasing. I want to thank everybody who called in. Listen, I got to tell you, Firefox has a beta out of their version 2. They say, and we say, don't run it unless you realize you're running a beta, because it's going to die. I've gotten email from people, I downloaded the beta and it doesn't work. That's right. It's a beta. It doesn't work. Don't run it. It's going to be a great product. Version 2. 1 is great. Version 2 will be great. Not yet. We'll be back next week with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with Rob Linton, who will learn to tell time between now and then. And me, Nick Francesco, on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.